What lessons can we learn from some of the things we've already read and covered? What lessons for us? I'm assuming when I give these sermons, you're sitting there saying, well, that's a lesson for me. And, you know, that might be a lesson for me. I'm hoping that you will be able to see that and apply some of these lessons in your own life. But let me give you a couple of things that I think are rather important. I want to read from James chapter 5, verse 17 and 18. Elijah was a man with a nature like ours, and he prayed earnestly that it would not rain. And it did not rain on the earth for 3 years and 6 months. Then he prayed again, and the sky poured rain, and the earth produced its fruit. Now, when you first see this, you see Elijah coming on the scene, and he says, there will be no rain or dew these years except by my word. You might have thought that God just kind of handed him some power. Okay, you just here's this power. Do what you want with it anytime you want with it. And that he could say, I'm just going to do it. I don't need God in my life. I don't need to maintain contact with God in my life. I've just got all this power now. I just stop the rain. I can make it rain. I can stop the dew. I can do it this for 3 years. I can do it. So, you know, it was 3 years and 6 months, it says here. But James tells us that he prayed, listen to this, earnestly that it would not rain. It wasn't something God handed him the power. Where does your power come from? It comes from your contact with God, your prayers, your staying in contact with God. That's where your power comes from. God doesn't just hand these guys, you know, you think of it, well, like, and you think the same thing about the two witnesses. Oh, they're just going to do this, and they can, fire comes out of their mouth, and they destroy their enemies. And do you think they're not in contact with God? They have to be. So miracles happen when you are in contact with God. And in order to keep that contact with God, you must pray. You must be in contact. You must be in communication with God. So Elijah, as strong as he was, powerful, he comes on the scene, there'll be no dew or rain, was on his knees, was praying to God. And when he came to, when he wanted it to rain, you remember at the Mount Carmel there, he was up there, he sent his servant up to the top. He was down on his knees and crouched down, his head between his knees, crouched down praying to God, praying. And then he would say to his servant, go up and see if there's, you see any rain. No, he comes back down. No clouds, no nothing. Clear sky. And he's crouching down between his knees, praying. Go up and see if there's more, any rain, any clouds. Nope, nothing, clear sky. And he keeps praying. He's praying fervently. You pray fervently. You pray with earnest. You pray with urgency. You pray with your heart. You pray with your mind. You pray with everything you've got, your being and energy. That you're in contact with God. I think that's a big lesson. That's a big lesson. Because you might think that, you know, he's specially chosen. He can just walk up there. He just does this. You know, he's on his own. And Elijah's such a great, powerful guy. James says, no, he's not just such a great, powerful guy. He got his power from God. In the same way with Samson, you'll remember. You know, remember Samson when he was in, when as long as his hair was, he had the Nazarite vow and his hair wasn't cut, you know. And that meant he took that vow to stay in contact with God. Well, when Delilah cut his hair, or she had these other people cut the hair, guess what? He violated that vow, and without contact with God, where did his strength go? He got up to tear off the Philistines, and what happened? I don't have any strength. They captured him. And at the end, he says, you know, God, give me, God, just grant me one more strength. Give me one more time. He got his hands on those pillars to see if I can just bring down this whole house of the Philistines. And but he prayed. He had to pray. So one of the things we learn, power and miracles come because of contact with God, not because of any strength of our own. Second lesson I'd like to say is, do not mistake a loving son, a loving family member, a loving husband, a loving family member, a loving son or daughter with weakness. Do not mistake love with weakness. Do not think that they're the same. Here's what I mean. When Elijah said to Elisha, put the mantle on you, Elisha knew what it meant. He knew what it meant. And he said, oh, let me go and kiss my father and mother, and then I'll come and follow you. I want to say goodbye. I want to kiss them. That was the term. I want to kiss them. You remember that in 1 Kings 19? Let me kiss my father and mother, and then I will serve you. And Elijah said, go. I don't want to just destroy you. I'm not trying to do something to you. Go ahead. Do not think that when a person says, I love my parents, you know, it's being tough. It's, I don't need my parents. I don't need my family. I don't care for people that are close to me. That's tough. Well, that's not tough. That's not tough. That's abrupt. It's cold, but it's not tough. You don't think Elisha, you would not want to go up to Elisha and say, you wimp. I don't think you'd want to do that. Because Elisha wasn't afraid of anybody. He told the king off. You remember that one king, Jehoram? He said, if Jehoshaphat wasn't here, I wouldn't even speak to you. I wouldn't see you. Elisha was tough. But he was loving. Don't mistake loving behavior as weakness. Do not do that. I'll give you an example. My dad was an orphan, and he grew up as a street kid. He was kind of tough. He had a lot of fights. And when I was a kid, he told me he'd never lost a fight to any one person. He fought a lot. He never lost a fight to any one single person. He was beat up. He lost the fight when he took on six kids at one time. They were all six teenagers, and one of them tackled him finally. He went down, and that's where he lost the fight. But otherwise, he never lost the fight. So he was a tough guy. And when he, not religious particularly at all, but he believed in God, he said, I knew God existed because I was an orphan, and nobody told me how to take care of myself. And I did a lot of things, you know. Stuck his bare feet in horse manure in the morning so that they keep warm because it was a cold morning and all this. And he said, I worked around a lot of stuff. Nobody told me how to take care of myself. But when he got to be an adult, he was married to my mother and, you know, had a family. And he was an electrician. He finally got a job as an electrician. And he worked there. And they rode together in the carpool. And so they went to work. And after work, and these other guys, you know, like four other guys with him, and then five of them in the car. Well, let's stop by and get a beer. You know, it's summertime, let's have a beer, and, you know, they stop by a place and have a beer. So my dad said, well, I don't like to drink more than one, so he would buy the first round. Let me buy the first round of beers, because, you know, he didn't want to have somebody else pay, and then he doesn't drink anymore. You know, so I'll buy the first round. So he buys the first round. And then the next guy says, well, I'll buy a round. Well, and then somebody else said, well, after about three rounds, my dad said, well, you know, hey guys, you know, he's looking at his watch. How long we got to be here? You know, I like to get on home. You know, let's finish here and, you know, get on home. And one of the guys said, what's the matter, Leo? Afraid of the old lady? That was not the thing to say, said my dad. Okay. I remember I said, do not mistake loving behavior with weakness. And my dad then lit into him with verbal. He said, no. He said, I'm not afraid of my wife. I'm not afraid of the old lady. I'm not afraid of my wife. I want to go home to my wife. It's you guys here. You're afraid of your wives. That's why you spend so much time away from them. And you try to stay away as long as you can, having beer after beer, because you're afraid of your wives. I'm not afraid of my wife. I want to go home and be with her. And they said, well, Leo, take it easy, man. You know, take it easy. You know, you're getting all upset. You're getting all excited. Do not mistake a person who loves their family, loves their wife, loves their mother, loves their father, loves relatives. Do not mistake that for weakness. As the soldiers and sailors of our country who went to war to defend their wives, their children, their friends, their other relatives, they become very brave. Because love makes you not afraid of anything. When you love someone, you're not afraid to face the ravages of war or other deprivations. Not afraid of it. Another lesson that I think comes out in these stories of Elijah, Elisha, is that the battle against evil is a never-ending one in this age. It never ends. Wrongdoing, evil, sickness, death are never finished in this age. Elijah defeated the prophets of Baal, but then Ahab and Jezebel were still in power. Ahab died and his sons took his place, both evil, both doing wrong, both doing the Baals. Killing Jezebel did not completely eliminate Baal worship in Israel. It did not completely restore Yahweh's religion over Israel. And it did not completely turn the people completely to a commitment to God. Evil is always there. Evil is always with us. It's a never-ending battle. Just as it's a battle with you and me in our own personal lives, fighting our own lusts, fighting our own troubles and our own problems, fighting against ourselves, fighting against the world, the things that are there in opposition. It's a never-ending battle. And you win one, you can't sit down and say, well, okay, man, I did it. We conquered evil, you know. I think Elijah was really disillusioned after he killed the 400 prophets of Baal. And what happened? After, you know, we win, I've shown them people that God, Yahweh, is the eternal. Yahweh is God. He is the Elohim. And now, what do we have? Jezebel's after me. She's still got the army. They're trying to come and kill me. He runs all the way down from up at Mount Carmel, all the way down to where? Down to Jericho and the Dead Sea. Trying to hide, and he hides himself under a broom bush, a bramble bush. You know, just hides under that. Sycamore tree, it says. So it's never ending. When you look around the world, you're going to say evil is here. Yes, evil is here. Guess what? It was there yesterday. It was there 10 years ago. It was there 20 years ago. It was there 100 years ago. It's going to be 1,000 years ago. And it's going to be here tomorrow. And 10 days later. And a year later and 10 years later. As long as this world, of this age, there's going to be evil. Another lesson I think is important, and that is evil leaders. You punish evil leaders, but you also end up punishing their people. When a person is evil over a country, over a nation, over a king, you're a king, you know, like Ahab was. And Elijah walks up and he says, you know, to punish you, Ahab, there will be no rain or dew these years except by my word. Of course, he was praying about it. You know, he wasn't that he was had all the power, but he was secretly and completely praying to God. But what happened? You cut off rain and dew. It's not just Ahab that doesn't get any rain and dew. All the way up in Sidon, here was this little widow. After Elisha went up there, she's got a little bit of flour and a little bit of oil. She says, there's no rain, there's no crops. You know, I'm just going to make, I got a little bit of flour and oil. I'm just going to make a little bit more for me and my son. We're going to die. And Elisha says, make me a little cake first. Make me a little cake first, and then go ahead and feed your son and you. And she looks at him, and he says, because the Eternal says the oil will not run out, and the flour will not run out, as long as, you know, the drought lasts. You'll be here. You'll be able to feed your son and yourself. So here's the lesson. People suffer. We punish Iran, for instance. If we take measures to punish Iran, the nation of Iran, all their leaders and all that, and we have these sanctions, you think the average person on the street doesn't feel those sanctions? They do. Iran's economy is hurt. The average person is hurt. Now, we hope that they'll turn and say, well, it's because of these bad leaders, but many people don't. They don't even turn against their leaders. They still, you know, then they feel powerless to do it. They don't know how to change the leadership. So evil leaders end up bringing terrible problems to their people. And when we punish the people, the leaders, often the people get hurt. That's just the way it is, and that's the way it has always been. Mussolini, Hitler, we went after them. Do you think they didn't bring devastation to their nation and to their country and to their people? Hitler did. Stalin did. Bashar Assad did in Syria. If we go and punish them, well, you don't think that all those people are going to be hurt? Hugo Chavez, Castro. They bring troubles to their people. Poverty, sickness. That's why so many people wanted to escape from Cuba. Terrible there. Trying to come to the United States. What lessons can we learn from Elisha? I'd like to turn to chapter 2 of 2 Kings. I want to read, beginning in verse 1. I'll read this again. It came about when the Eternal was about to take Elijah by the whirlwind to heaven, up into the heaven. We know it's a, you know, first heaven here. That Elijah went with Elisha from Gilgal. They were in Gilgal, which is close to down toward the Bethel. It's a little few miles. Elijah said to Elisha, stay here, please. You know, I think King James says, tarry here, I pray you. You know, that's the old King James. Stay here, please, for the Eternal has sent me as far as Bethel. In other words, we're in Gilgal, but I'm going over to Bethel. You stay here. But Elisha said, as the Eternal lives, and as you yourself live, I will not leave you. So they went down to Bethel. Okay? Now they went down. So they must, Gilgal had to be up a little bit. They went downhill. Then the sons of the prophets who were at Bethel came out to see Elisha, and he said to them, and they said to him, do you know that the Eternal will take away your master from over you today? And he said, yes, I know it. Just be still. Elijah then says to Elisha, Elisha, please stay here, for the Eternal has sent me to Jericho. I got to go all the way to Jericho now. The Eternal tells me I got to go to Jericho. You don't have to come. In a sense, it's like you don't have to come. But he said, as the Eternal lives and as you yourself live, I will not leave you. Well, the sons of the prophets who were at Jericho approached. Now they go on to Jericho. Now, I want you to know, it's not a short drive. You know, we would get in our car, maybe if you had a car, going from Gilgal to Jericho, no problem. But walk from here to downtown Old Town Pasadena. On the streets, nice paved streets, all level pretty much. No bushes, no difficult rocks, no severe trails. You don't have to go uphill very much. Walk from here to downtown Pasadena and tell me what a walk it is that most people couldn't, you know, would disdain to do it. Well, what I do? How am I going to get downtown Pasadena? Oh, jump into my car, turn on, you know, You know, we're a bunch of cream puffs. Let's face it, you know. we just don't have, I mean, here's Elisha. I'm going with you. As you yourself, I'm going with you. So they came to Jericho, and the sons of the prophets of Jericho approached Elisha. And they said to him, do you know that the Eternal will take away your master from over you today? And he said, yes, I know. Be still. You know, just be calm. Then Elijah said to him, well, stay here, for the Eternal has sent me to the Jordan. I've got to go down now to the Jordan River. And Elisha says, as the Eternal, your God, lives, as the Eternal lives, and as you yourself live, I will not leave you. So what does verse 6 say? The two of them went on. Now, was it a command? Was Elijah commanding him to stay? No, it was not a command. But I just want you to notice the strength of this man's commitment. Let's go on a little further. Now the 50 men of the sons of the prophet. I don't want to read that right now. Okay, I read to verse 6. I think that's important. I want you to notice the strength of Elisha's commitment to Elijah, okay? I will not leave you. I will not go back from Gilgal to Bethel to Jericho to the Jordan. A round trip of about close to, if you were to plot on a map, somewhere close to 30 miles. And it looks like it happened all in the same day. Now, I don't know about you. How many of you have ever walked 20 miles? 20 miles, that's good. Walk one time, 20 miles. Is that a good walk? Is that a good walk? Is it a hard walk? Are you tired after you do 20 miles? I did it once. I did 20 miles. And I was, you know, I was just coming in pretty tired. My pants were very loose on me. I had burned off all kinds of fat off across my stomach after 20 miles of walking. I was hunting, you know, I had my stuff on, carrying a gun and all that. Okay, so 20 miles. This was close to 30 miles. And it was up and down terrain, and they didn't have paved roads. They weren't completely paved and sidewalks nice. A lot of times you're cutting through brush and this and that, you know, going over a little terrain, and it was not just easy. Whether it was even easy, it was hard. I mean, but easy walking would be tough. But Elisha said, no. Elisha's tough. I'm telling you, don't say he's a cream puff. He's tough. He's going to stay in there. Now, I don't care how much talent you have, ability do you have, how many gifts you have. You may be gifted with all kinds of things. Nothing compensates or substitutes for commitment. And nothing can compensate, I should say, for a lack of commitment. Commitment is it. If you lack commitment, you will not profit by all the other blessings and helps and talents and abilities. If you lack commitment, all kinds of people have had talent. They just can't get the commitment to commit to doing something, to commit to being with God, to commit to serving God, to commit. They can't commit. Some people can't even commit to marriage. They can't commit to it. You know, I have people that been, one guy had been engaged about 4 or 5 times, and, you know, he breaks off every time. I said, what's the problem? He said, I have a trouble with commitment. I said, no kidding. No kidding. You have trouble with commitment. Okay, yeah, I have commitment. All right. So people, they have a, but when you come to commitment with God, you have to have a commitment with God. Some are so uncommitted, they don't even respond to God's call. Now here's Elisha. He responds to God's call. Let me go home. Let me go home first and kiss my mother and father, and then I'll follow you. I'll commit myself. He committed 100% here. This is very much like the parable of the sower. You remember the parable of the sower? The parable of the sower, he went out to sow. Some of the seed fell on rocky ground. Some of it fell among the thorns. Some of it fell here in the shallow ground. And some of it fell on the good ground. Now, a lot of the seed is wasted. And the ones that fell on good ground, it produced many fold, lots of fold. We have to let God's seed, you hope you're good ground, because it takes commitment. Now, when Elijah said, you know, it's obviously, if he had a command to Elisha, stay here and don't follow me, then, you know, if it had been that kind of command, if Elisha had said, no, I'm not going to, that would have been disobedient, right? That would have been insubordination. But he said, you know, why don't you go ahead and stay here? You know, I got to make this trip over here to Jericho. I mean, stay here for a while. You know, stay with it, you know, and rest yourself. And he said, no, I'm here to serve you and to minister you. I'm going with you. I'm going to go. I'm going to make the trip. And he did. It was sort of like what happened when Naomi said to her children, you remember her daughter-in-laws, remember she had two sons, they were in the area of the Moabites, and she said, why don't you stay, you know, my sons, I don't have any more sons in me anymore, I'm old now, I'm not going to be bearing any more children, you both had married my sons, now my sons are dead. And I love you both. Why don't you go back to your family? And Ruth says, what? I will not. Wherever you go, I will go. Your people will be my people. Well, Naomi knew it was not an easy thing for a Moabitess to come into the nation of Israel and be 100% accepted and be, you know, all the things that would happen. She knew it was not easy. So she said, you know, girls, you know, and first the other one said too, oh no, we'll follow you, we'll go. And she said, no, look, this is not easy, why don't you go back to your family? So the other one said, well, okay, I'm going back to my original family. But Ruth said, no, I'm following you. I want to go where you go. I want to be there. And so what does she do? She follows Ruth. She follows Naomi and comes in. And it was not an easy thing. So here's what we have with Elisha. Elisha is sort of put to some kinds of tests here. If you want to say, did he have loyalty? Would you say Elisha had loyalty? Absolutely. He said, I'm following you. I know it's not a command for you to make me stay here, but you just suggest I stay here for my sake. It's a hard work, but I'm not going to stay here. Ruth had loyalty. I'm going to go with you. I'm going to go with you. And once again, Naomi said, turn, my daughters. Turn, go back. You know, you don't have to be. I mean, she gave them the opportunity. No, you don't have to go here. But Ruth said, no, I'm going. I'm going with you. So Naomi tried to convince Ruth. Once she became convinced that Ruth was real, that her intentions were and her commitment was real, she said, "Okay, come with me. Let's go together." Now we have to know that when Elijah said, "Stay here," it was not a command, and when Elisha said, "I want to go with you," it was not disobedient. Do you think Elisha was a hard-working person? Absolutely. He was plowing with his father's oxen. He was a man of the soil. He was hard-working. You know, he made that trip of about 30 miles. You know, he was tough. He was committed. You have this passage in the book of 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 3. Paul instructed Timothy. He said this. He said, endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. That's 2 Timothy 2 and verse 3. Endure hardness. You know, today it's like, well, that's pretty hard. That's pretty hard to do. You know, you have to get up early. You have to get ready, go to church. You have to take a shower. You got to put on clothes. You got to drive there. That's hard. You know, that's really hard to do. You know, and the slightest difficulty seems to overwhelm people, even in their pursuit of God. You know, if it's a little too difficult, well, we're not going to do it. Why? Because it's hard. Not Elisha. Elisha was committed. Elisha worked hard. You know the old saying, when the going gets tough, what happens to the tough? They get going. They bore in. They are strong. And that's what you have here. A soldier endures hardship. Well, I'm telling you, soldiers do endure. They do endure a lot of privations, deprivations. Okay? But today, the average person, I want to go to the church that's nearest to me. I want to go to the church that's easy to parking. If you ask a bunch of people, where do you go to church and why do you go there? Well, it's comfortable. Well, it have a nice parking area. Well, you know, it's easy to get to. Well, it's close to my home. Well, this is what makes people want to go to church. This is the thing. Not the Bible, not the truth, not the doctrines. These other things. No, he had the test of loyalty. He was loyal. He had the test of labor. He labored. He was committed and he worked hard. And he was willing to suffer. I'll go with you. I'm not going to stay here. And somebody, you know, and Elijah said, you know, no, you know what kind of a condition Elijah was in. He went from, you know, Carmel all the way down to Beersheba. He was strong. He was, and he said, you know, maybe you'd rather stay. I mean, it's a hard walk. And Elijah said, no, I'm going. And he did. And he kept up with him. And sometimes when you're at the top of something, when you're the man, sometimes there's a little bit of a loneliness. And could he endure that? Let's take a turn to 2 Kings again. Let's turn to 2 Kings, and we're going to drop down to verse 7. Now, 50 men of the sons of the prophets went and stood opposite them at a distance while the two of them stood by the Jordan. Now, they went all the way down. Remember, they went there, they went there. I'm 2 Kings chapter 2, verse 7. And how they come back to the Jordan. Elijah took his mantle and folded it together and struck the waters, and they were divided here and there. So the two of them crossed over on dry ground. When they had crossed over, Elijah said to Elisha, ask what shall I do for you before I am taken? And Elisha said, give me $1 million. No, he didn't say that. He said, please give me, let me a double portion of your spirit upon me. I see your spirit, your commitment, your drive, your dedication, Elijah. I want that. I want twice that in me. And he said, well, you've asked the tough thing. Nevertheless, if you see me when I'm taken from you, it shall be for you, but if you've not, it shall not be so. If you get a chance to see me as I go, which meant, guess what? You're keeping your eye on him, right? You're going to keep your eye on Elijah, right? Right? Somebody says, if you see me when I'm taken up, because something's going to happen, I'm going to be gone like that. You're going to take it up in the whirlwind. You got to be watching him, watching him. I'm not letting you out of my sight, man. I'm not letting you out of my sight. I'm going to, where are you going? You know, you're around the corner, you're going to go to the bathroom, so I'm going around the corner. I'm watching you. Wherever you go, I'm watching you. And as they were going along and talking, behold, there appeared a chariot of fire, horses of fire, and that separated. It came down and kind of separated. They're walking along, talking, and it separated the two of them. So some come and say, God, you've got to move out of the way. And now it separated the two of them. And Elisha went up by a whirlwind. And Elijah went up, and Elisha saw it. He saw it. He was separated from him, and he cried out, my father, the chariot of Israel and its horsemen. And he saw Elijah no more. He just saw him. It happened quick. Wasn't long, it wasn't like one of these hovercrafts. It just goes slow. This thing was like in a whirlwind up and away. He was gone, and he saw him no more. Then he took hold of his own clothes, and he tore them in pieces. And he also took up the mantle of Elijah, which fell from him, and he returned and stood by the bank of the Jordan. Now he's on the same bank of the Jordan. He's got to go on the other side. And he took the mantle of Elijah that fell from him, and he struck the waters and said, where is the Eternal, the God of Elijah? And when he also had struck the waters, they were divided here and there, and Elisha crossed over. He crossed over on dry ground. Now, what do these guys do? Let's go down to verse 15. Now, when the sons of the prophets who were in Jericho opposite saw him, the spirit of Elijah rests. They saw that. They said, hey, the spirit of Elijah rests on Elisha. And they came to meet him and bowed themselves to the ground before him. And they said to him, behold, now there are with your servants 50 strong men. Now, and here this, we got some guys here. Please let them go and search for your master. Now, we know the spirit of Elijah is on you, but we need Elijah here. He's been here a long time. Let's see if we can find him. Perhaps the spirit of the Eternal has taken him up and cast him on some mountain or into some valley. And what did Elisha say? You shall not send them. Don't send them. Don't send them. It's no use. Because Elisha now knew the mantle had fallen to him. He was now the person that was going to take charge. He was going to go forward. But when they urged him until he was ashamed. Well, why not? Don't you want Elijah here? I mean, Elijah would be great if we could find him. We could just bring him back and we could have him. Come on. What's the problem? Don't you want him back? I mean, I thought you liked him. I thought, well, yeah, I do. I mean, well, why can't we go and look for him? Well, what's the problem with looking for him? Well, okay then. All right, go ahead and do it. They urged him till he was ashamed, and he said, okay, send them. Send the 50 strong men. Send them out. So they sent, therefore, the 50 men, and they searched 3 days, but they did not find him. 3 full days. I mean, they're walking here, 50 guys who are pretty strong, and can cover a lot of territory, a lot of ground, walking here and there. It went 3 days, and all around valleys, mountains, tops, and looking here, looking there. I mean, there are no huge mountains like we have here in California, but you go up a little temple, a little hill, and mountains, and here, can't find him. So, searched 3 days, did not find him. They returned to him while he was staying at Jericho. So Elisha goes up to Jericho. And he said to them, didn't I say to you, don't go? I told you it's useless. Do not go. I think they thought he didn't want to go because he didn't want Elijah back or something. But I told you, don't go. You won't find him. God had a purpose. The reason God did this, it was a purpose. And Elijah's out of the way. Then the men of the city of Elisha said, Now behold, the situation of this city is pleasant as my Lord sees, but the water is bad. And then you have the first miracle of the jar. Put salt in the jar, he says. And he went out to the spring and he threw the salt in that. And the water became drinkable. And there shall be no more, there shall not be from there death or unfruitfulness any longer. So first, here's another miracle. First, the first miracle that Elisha does is what? Parts the waters. Second miracle, throws the salt in and it is healed. So Elijah, his response to God's call was zealous, courageous, complete, a total. It was thoughtful. He knew what he was doing. He didn't just, you know, on an excitement moment. You know, you get some of these evangelistic campaigns, and they work the people up, and come forward and give your heart to the Lord. Don't you feel like, you have the music pounding and this, and then come on forward and give your heart to the Lord. So finally people get up, and they come down in an emotional state, and they, okay, I commit, I believe in Jesus, and so on, and off they go. Not this guy. He thought it through. He knew what he wanted. He knew what it meant. He made a commitment. We'll talk more about his response to the call of God and how that might be an example for you and me today. Next time.